We decided on public hearings at the very outset because of the fact that we were denied access to North Korea. It's not unusual for commissions of inquiry and some of the country-specific special rapporteurs to be denied such access. But then we puzzled and we scratched our heads and tried to think, what can we do to secure convincing testimony and to put it before the world community in a more effective way?
And now, speaking of the witnesses, how did they hear about the inquiry so that they can participate in it?
It was put on the World Wide Web. It was advertised in the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights website, and it got around by word of mouth amongst the community groups. We reached out to the non-governmental organizations as well as the nation states that have most interest in this area, and there was no problem getting witnesses. I mean, the duty of the secretariat of the Commission of Inquiry was addressed to choosing amongst them those who would be most typical of the mandate heads, so that we would get the best possible, most reliable, and the most powerful testimony available to us. There were some witnesses who, because they have family in North Korea, were not very happy about giving public testimony in public hearings, but were willing to give confidential testimony. And people of that group we saw privately and under conditions of confidence.
Mr. Kirby, you've been a judge for more than 30 years, and you yourself said that, you were quite distressed by some of the testimony that you've heard.
Yes, I must say that I thought my heart had been hardened by all the years in which I sat in cases and I saw the whole range of human wrongdoing, murder, violence, cruelty, fraud, families turning on each other, and so on. But I was surprised that I did react and did cry at some of the testimony of parents who just wanted to know where their daughter was. She was at school, she was due to come home after a basketball practice, and she never turned up and hasn't been seen since that day, and she was only 16. They didn't hate North Korea, they just want to know if their daughter's alive, and they hope that she's happy, that's all. And the testimony of a woman whose husband was seized during the Korean War 60 years ago, and she says that to lose a husband, lose a partner, is like losing an arm. And you think of your own life and your own relationships and the suffering that has gone on for 60 years, and no proper response is itself a sort of cruelty and unkindness. Human rights are basically founded on love, human love, because we know enough about each other to know that it hurts when human rights are abused. So I'm not ashamed of feeling upset. I'm just a bit surprised that after 34 years as a judge, it still happens. But this is a particularly sad set of instances.
What will be the next steps? Your report to the Human Rights Council won't appear until March of next year, I believe. Until then, what will the Commission be doing?
We will be considering all the testimony. Of course, this week we have to go to Washington, D.C. and engage in further public hearings and dialogue with congressional committee and with experts and scholars and other groups, non-governmental organizations in Washington. But once that's over, we'll be analyzing all this testimony, and then we'll be in the conclusion and report writing phase, and that will be probably in January 2014, so that it can be ready for presentation in March. And we are one mandate holder in the United Nations. It's not looking for an extension of time. We want to complete our job on time to the United Nations, and then it will be over to the member states to decide what they can do in order to address the matters which we will set out in our report, hopefully with clarity, so that it is not a report that just goes into the dungeon here in New York and gathers dust here or in Geneva, but is something which will be acted on by the world community.